Pay for this, dude.
Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are at State Fair in Canesville, in the 21228. It's warm. It's too hot, Don. I don't. Why did we decide to go outside today?
We're outside. We're in person. There are people. We've been here now a couple of hours. People are lining up to get in.
We got graduation over here. Half of UMBC
graduating. It's been a lot of excitement in the Ville today.
If you hear any cheers, they're for Pat, right?
it's for me.
You kick off this crab cake tour.
Well, I tell you what, I told you to bring out the locals and the finest. These are both guys we've had on the program before. Eric's been here for a number of broadcasts back when we used to actually get together with people here. Like, I showed up this morning and I ordered chicken and waffles. I almost ordered the crab Benedict Chesapeake, but then I realized we're having a crab cake thing we're doing in the next segment here. The pieces of the puzzle that bring Catonsville together. This is most important to you.
Well, we've just got, again, when you represent any really part of Baltimore County with the different communities, Baltimore County is really a collection of communities, certainly true in Catonsville. And when you represent Catonsville, it's because you are a part of the community. Today, we're delighted to have Delegate Eric Eversole, District 12, and just recently had on Delegate Pat Young from 44B, and we're gonna break some news today about Delegate.
Well,
Pat
all we
Young
talked about him last time was war, right? I mean, your background. now today we get to talk about peace, right?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about peace and the future and
seriously,
a lot of.
You're a veteran.
A lot of good things going on, guys. Eric, when we had Pat on recently, he talked at length about the last 18 months and trying to govern during a pandemic. Talk about your experience in terms of what it was like in the General Assembly trying to govern during the midst of a pandemic.
Well, I think the presiding officers and their staffs were most concerned to keep us healthy, because if it ran through us and we had to go home, we'd have run into a similar thing that we ran into the year before. And we'd have a lot of bills that would have made it didn't because of time. So they were incredibly restrictive with us about where we could go and who we could have. And I think, you know, we had a couple of cases, and we're not really allowed to tell who they were. I don't think I knew who they were for sure, but people would disappear. But we did not have a run through the legislature, and they let us vax up. And I know there were a few holdouts, which is, you know, always the case, unfortunately. But for the most part, we did. And so what we had was we had a full session, and that's the bottom line. We got through a full session. Pat and I were in what we like to refer to as the scarlet letter A, annex.
Okay. A for annex.
Well, describe the annex. When people say we're trying to govern in a pandemic, talk about the logistics, because I think folks out there are actually interested. What did it look like? How were you all spread out?
They spread out. So they had individual desks in the delegation rooms anyway. They usually have a horseshoe where all the members sit. They spread them all out so there was about a good 6 feet of distance between you and somebody else. They had plastic dividers up so while you were in a small little seat, like almost like you're in school again, they have your computer set up. You had iPads so you could vote. Everything who was in the annex, you could do almost everything you do on the floor, except you were sitting in the annex over in the House Office Building looking at the proceedings. And there was a little bit of a disconnect, a little bit of a delay. If you wanted to get recognized, you had to press the button, wait for them to mention something. Then you had to go to the penalty box or the booth right in the middle that was being recorded, because it's the only spot
being recorded.
It did look like a hockey penalty box. It did. When you wanted to testify
on
a bill or speak.
A little bit. I felt like I was on trial.
Right. Yeah, they wanted to play the Judge Judy music or something.
Right. Exactly.
I'm watching people all day. I've been here since 10 o'clock. People are graduating at the next table. There's about 15 kids over there. All their families are here. They're watching the graduation on TV, and they're standing up at the table and screaming. I'm thinking, everything's weird about this.
Yeah.
I'm holding this. I'm trying to take selfies with the support, the Ville. Nothing's normal about, like, people say, why do you have a pink shirt today? Well, my face mask is pink. I want to match. You know what
right?
I mean? The weird memories we're going to have of the sin bin, you know, place in Annapolis that we go to try to get bills. I hope all of this goes by and we talk about this last year and a half as though, do you remember that? How weird that was and how normal things are now that we're here in Catonsville and Faithies is open and we're having normal. Yeah. And it's going to happen quick.
It does feel closer to normal, right? I mean, last year at this time, we would not have been sitting here. I mean,
at all.
Last year at this time when my granddaughter, who's now finishing her freshman year in college, was graduating and having her award ceremony, it literally, we couldn't even have Jeff, her uncle, and Sandra, her aunt, and their children at Jennifer's. It was literally just the grandparents spread out in the house watching on TV, and there was no celebration or anything. So this is,
sure.
It feels as if we're coming back, and
it
you've
does.
Got, Delegate, you've got big news that Frederick Road Fridays that everybody is coming back.
But can I park? Will there be a place for me to park?
Yes.
Yeah. Just asking.
Yeah, you're right.
You can have my space. Okay.
Tell folks who aren't familiar with Catonsville what Frederick Road Fridays is and why it has become such an amazing community event.
Right. So, you know, the idea was is to get people into Catonsville and see what a great town it was. We've really become a restaurant row, even more so with State Fair and El Guapo opening up across the road. The idea was to get people in. So it was an early concert, 6:30 to 8:30. I think it's going to be 6 to 8 this year. So that people would come, have a beer or two, listen to some music, maybe spill out in the community. The Chamber helps sponsor it and makes it go. But we started.
Last time I went, piece of pizza. I had some pizza. There you go. Sponsor.
And am I right,
local?
Eric?
That's right. All local.
I think also that different nonprofits in the area get to have the beer concession for that night.
Right. So
Do I have that right?
They work the beer and they split the profits with the Chamber, who you know runs it all back up again. But that every week there is YMCA is on. I think the YMCA is signed up for the 9th. Or the Y, as it's called now.
We just had John
and
Hoey
they
on.
Get volunteers to come and help serve all the beer and collect all the money and do all that
John
stuff.
John Hoey was on when I was in the car coming up Frederick Road.
Yes.
So there's just another example of how I'm not really on the radio all the time. Even I listen to myself.
You were on the radio as
it's
I was driving up here today.
It's amazing when I listen to myself on Wilkins Avenue going over
John
the Maiden
was,
Choice of the Wise Marcus.
John was talking about the great
I got to get cones after the show. Remind me of that.
Cones,
right?
Yeah.
So July the 7th, for those of you
July
out
9th,
there.
July 9th.
Oh, I'm sorry. July the 9th. For those of you out there in the region, put it on your calendars. The amazing thing is, no charge for these incredible
no
bands.
Charge.
No charge.
Yeah.
You bring your lawn chair. You set up right down here behind.
Can I leave it
Bill's
after the
music.
4th?
You can bring it up. You take your chair.
You got to drop it off.
Hold on. Let me get this straight. If I can bring it up here June 18th and leave it, nobody
says
anything.
You can bring it up here on January
1st. Nobody's going to touch it.
All right. So if on July 5th I leave it there for a couple, five more days.
Nobody's going to care. Your chair will sit there till the cows come home.
And you wonder why I support the Ville the way I do. You know, you wonder why.
Now, in addition to Frederick Road Fridays, we do have, we always say we never go in a straight line.
I should drink on the show more often.
Possibly.
One Orange Crush, Brooks Robinson, everything gets square.
Happy
here.
Birthday again, Brooksy.
Guinness people don't know what they're missing.
But we had Delegate Pat Young on a couple weeks ago, and Delegate Ebersole, he was a little coy with us. He was like, yeah, I'm looking at some things.
Well,
I might be doing some things.
Drum roll,
you know,
please.
Now, I think we've got an announcement to make. Delegate, is that correct?
I couldn't tell you then. I was going to say, like, 3 days after the interview, I made an announcement that I'll be running for Baltimore County, 1st District County Councilman. So
congratulations.
Are you going to win? That's the most important thing.
I have fingers crossed.
All right.
Doing
I ask every candidate that.
I haven't decided
on my endorsement yet. Yes, wait. Okay, I just did. I endorse you.
Oh, nice. We got news on that,
I think
too.
The guy to my left introduced you at your announcement. I asked, first of all, before I turn back to Delegate Young, you stood up very publicly and said, he's my guy. He's going to be a great councilman. People go, why? Why is he going to be a good councilman?
Because he's the perfect blend, man.
I mean, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, he's the funniest guy in the legislature, and it hurts me to say that because I think I'm funny. Okay,
I feel like I'm in Good Morning Vietnam.
I don't think either one of them were funny when I was setting my equipment.
I know funny right now. Nestor thinks he's funny, so pretty soon we're going to have a funny off here.
I wouldn't say I'm funny. I let other people say it.
First of all, he's a rare blend. Because I say this with lots of care, but many veterans tend very conservative and don't have the open and good progressive views that Pat holds. And so I honor him, and I'll tell you a story. His wife is like a great progressive, too. And I assume she took this veteran and taught him what was right and explained to him, and he got it. And apparently she'll tell me it's the other way around.
Uh-oh.
That he really embraced an inclusive way of looking at people and making sure that we take care of everyone in a way, and then he's like really savvy too. Okay, I've watched him operate. He knows how to get things done. He's not mean or slick, but he does understand steps, and I've watched him when he chairs Baltimore County delegation. I've watched him manage some really important issues, and he gets it.
Well, Pat Nestor loves what he really likes, and he's been very open about it.
Sure.
What he likes about Baltimore Positive is that it's a social studies class. It's a it's a civics lesson, and we ask
I don't get to meet a whole lot of guys that were rolling around in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know what I mean? Like you do, but. You don't talk to veterans. People don't talk to veterans about that, right? Like, literally.
Well, you know, and sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. Some people are comfortable talking. Sometimes they're not. I mean, I think I've become more comfortable talking, especially in the line of work I'm in. But
my father-in-law fought in Vietnam. I've never had a conversation with him about it. I don't think he would want me to start it, and I don't think he'd want to continue it.
And that's kind of like knowing the person that you're talking with. I mean, if you can tell that they don't want to talk.
You said Vietnam, Nestor.
Vietnam, my father-in-law.
You know, I'm going to turn back. Boy. Yeah. Love this, because that's a real different thing. I'm gonna tell you an experience I had in Williamsburg 40 years ago. And I always think back, and again, as someone who opposed the Vietnam War, we made a real mistake back then. And this is someone, I mean, I was in the protest. I was in D.C. I was marching on the Capitol.
You had a dream.
I mean, I opposed that war. But what we didn't do back then, and Pat, I turn to you, we didn't make a distinction clearly enough between the service of the men and women who went to do what they were called upon and objecting to a war that many felt was immoral.
Sure.
I think many Vietnam vets, for them, that was a scar. They felt let down by America.
Inner conflict.
When they came home. When you came back, And react if I'm wrong about this. I know that throughout the Iraq wars, whenever I would see someone in uniform in an airport or in a train station, or in a restaurant, I'd go up and say, "Hey, thank you very much." I got a sense that Americans appreciated you men and women. And did you get that, or am I overstating that?
I mean, I don't think you're overstating. I think that every generation that served in a conflict comes back with their own challenges. And the Iraq and Afghanistan conflict is no different. But I would say that the general collective psyche of like the American people was overwhelmingly supportive. One, knowing that we were doing something that not a lot of folks were doing, only 1% of the population serving. But then also knowing that they want to thank in some way, and a lot of folks don't necessarily know exactly how to thank someone that's been serving or taking time out of their life to serve their country. And that turned around in an outpouring of support, verbal support, visual support, where in past conflicts, where there wasn't the same start of the conflict, or there wasn't a clear defining moment that created it, or everyone knew why we were there, and they appreciated the work. And now the question is, when there's only 1% of the population serving, and back to why I feel more comfortable talking about it, is you have a disconnect between folks who might want to support you by listening, but then not understanding the story you're telling. And as a vet, that's demoralizing after 10, 15, 20 times. Like, coming back, and you have a story to tell, and you're talking to your friends, and you clearly realize that you've gone too far. You've said a little too much. Or you've said something that you thought was funny that no one else does, and they're just kind of like, yeah. Well, thank you for doing it anyway. And
so what you hear is a very sensitive guy here. This, you know, you ask me why I like him. Because not only does he not wear it on his sleeve. I mean, he obviously didn't serve so he could tell everybody he did, okay? He served because he thought it was the right thing to do. But he's also incredibly careful. He's been careful with me. I've seen him try to make a decision about how much of a story to tell me, you know? And I thought afterwards that, you know, he's got a lot to tell.
Well, what makes that distinction? Whether the person can handle it or whether they want the truth? Because the truth probably is, like, really ugly. I ask a question. Really ugly sausage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, if you and I were to get on the third beer and talk about the shit you saw.
I think it has something.
Like, I don't know that most men, women, or children, I don't know that I could handle it, to be honest with you.
I think you talk to 10 different vets, you'll get 10 different stories, but I feel like that there's one piece is a internal concern about how you'll be perceived by people you care about. People's opinion.
You did what?
Yeah.
For the United States? What?
Being complete. I mean, wait, it's not just vets anyway. Like, individually, we choose how much we tell everybody. It's not, when we're telling a story about what we do for work, we tell a story about what we've done or what we've experienced. Like, we wash it in a certain way that make us look better. You can understand with a vet that was there with you, you can tell and talk about that story exactly how it happened, but that doesn't mean that you're going to understand, my mom's going to understand, my wife's going to understand. So you try and say it in such a way that's in my opinion, in the way that I've done it, because, you know, you'll talk to a vet, you'll hear a story, like, you can connect to it. You hear a story, you can't connect to it. Then you hear a story, and you're kind of like, whoa, that's a little, that, you know, can't relate to that at all, and it seems like that person's had some issues or had something that's gone through.
I think there comes a point for people at war, there's a dehumanization of the enemy, whoever the enemy is, you know? So, I mean, that's going on in our country right now amongst each other,
yeah.
Right? Going on right here in 21228, going on everywhere, right?
Yeah, I mean...
When you're there and when you hear Muslims are this or foreigners are that or Iraqi, I'm sure you're thinking of little children over there that aren't little anymore, right?
So if I could, and I appreciate the question, because one, everything Eric said, I appreciate you saying too, because we don't really, you know, we don't talk to each other about why we respect each other all the time. It doesn't happen. So, I mean, if... I tend to think of this world, this experience, military politics, as the empathy of the fact and the realization that everybody's just trying to live their life. Everybody is. We're serving overseas, and like we were in trouble a lot. I was in the infantry. We were in the Battle of Fallujah. We served 9 months in Anbar Province. Like, we weren't in a good area. But that didn't mean that everybody that we were interacting with was bad or that they wanted ill will. Or even sometimes maybe it was justified what they wanted, but that didn't mean that we were just going to sit back and do nothing about it. And you come home and you have folks like make these trivial like connections and turn somebody into an enemy when you're like, none of this is as important as that. I mean, like, nothing that I've done up to this point where I've had an impact was as important or real or as serious as when I was serving overseas in Iraq with my unit. And we come over here, and then you make these things that just don't seem to be as important. At the end of the day, the
and
most important thing
you're there protecting people that weren't American, right?
Exactly.
Literally, that's why you're there.
You're
protecting innocent people from genocide, essentially, right?
And then you come back here, and you interact. You can see the humanity in everybody. I mean, there's no reason to create a differentiation between me or somebody that thinks differently than me. I can sit there and smile and listen to your opinion and know that it's an opinion. At the end of the day, we can disagree, and I get to go home to my family. You know, we can go fight the good fight down in Annapolis, but on the worst day in Annapolis, I still get to go home to my family. And it's just, while it's important work, it's not life and death. It just isn't life and death.
You have a real perspective. That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, driving up 97 is a little different than going to bed in Fallujah.
That's a really interesting perspective. We are with Delegate Pat Young, 44B, Delegate Eric Ebersole, District 12. So, Pat, we fast forward with your back. You've had a successful career as a delegate. Going back to Nestor's social studies part of this class, what makes a good county councilman? Forget just this district. Just in general, what should people expect from their county councilman? In Nestor's
case, I don't think most citizens know. Or even, you know, even when they vote, they don't really... I like that guy. I heard him speak once. He's a soldier. He's a good guy. He's a business owner. He's a nice guy I met at State Fair over Chicken. You know, I mean, people don't know, right? Really?
Yeah. I think generally an expectation of any elected official, because, you know, at the end of the day, and Eric, you know this, folks don't know the difference sometimes between a councilman and a delegate or what the local issues are, what the state issues are. But I think the expectation tends to be the same when it's, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, too, that they expect some sort of... customer service would be a way to put it. Some sort of involvement in, one, the community in which you represent, the district you represent. And even if they don't agree, I mean, at the end of the day, like, folks are reaching out to the office and they expect a response. I mean, that's just basics. And unfortunately, you run into folks that, not that I've seen on the Southwest side, that the constituent service takes second fiddle to big picture things, like going in trying to do big pieces of legislation.
Or raising money and getting reelected.
Kevin Kamenich used to say all the time, and I thought he was, and again, I think it spoke to his background in terms of having been a councilman for four terms, and then he used to say, there aren't Republican schools to build and Democratic schools to build. There aren't Republican potholes and Democratic potholes, right? These are just issues to be solved. They're not part at local on the local level. It's typically not about partisan politics.
And it's important to note that I know not everybody voted for me. Pat knows not everybody voted for him, but they're still all our constituents.
Every single
we have to serve them all, including children who sometimes need us to advocate for them who don't vote at all.
Yeah. Well, to your point, I have to laugh because I live in the city and I'm thinking, there are no Republican potholes, there are no Republican anything. Everything's Democratic in the city. and then they get blamed for not getting it done. And that, you know, then that becomes a scar all the way around when you're not being effective in government, no matter what it is. No Republican's ever going to get elected in the city, ever, no matter what,
and,
right? And but that still doesn't get the pothole fixed.
And Pat and Eric, Pat and Eric both represent districts with a large number of Republican voters. I mean, these are pretty diverse.
And they can't perceive you as the enemy the way Trump has trumped this up to be. If you get the pothole fixed, you're a friend, right? Literally.
That's true. Yeah. And you know, I'm
get the issue solved, I'd say.
Yeah,
right.
Going for the issue.
But there are partisan issues. And
there
I get mail on both sides of partisan issues. And I acknowledge the people who I don't agree with. Sometimes they will write to me, I'm your constituent. I elected you. You have to vote like your constituents want you to. And I always want to say, constituents, you know, I have to listen.
Plural.
There's not everybody in this district is going to agree on the tough issues.
Right.
I have to listen and get a sense of what my, and that's what Pat said, getting in touch with the community, understanding what their concerns are is critical.
And at the end of the day, even if you don't agree with the way that they want something to happen, letting them, the feeling that they know that there's a voice that's willing to listen, or someone's there willing to listen to their voice. It's the, when folks feel like they're being oppressed or like not even bothered being listened to, you start getting these issues where it's just that this person doesn't care or this person doesn't know what's going on. And I mean, I think that we've done a good job on the Southwest side just of collectively figuring something out where if it's not me, if it, hey, listen, I'm going to be honest with you, that's not my district, but you know what, I'm going to connect to the person that can. Connecting folks to the answer to their issue, even if it doesn't fix their problem, but an answer, whether it's sorry, that's not going to happen, or this is what it would take to get it to happen, but it's some sort of response. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that there's just a disconnect between folks and what can be done and what they want to have done, but being able to communicate that and not know that you're not going to win everybody over on it and they're not going to be happy with the response, but at least providing one is key. And
absolutely. Getting back
to honesty.
If you don't agree with somebody, I tell them, you know, thank you for writing. You should know that. I don't see exactly eye to eye with you on this, but I appreciate you keeping my mind open.
I respect you. You know, the last time we had Pat on, he talked a little bit about his upbringing and what he learned from mom and dad. Eric, you not long ago said goodbye to your dad, long-time educator, long-time Catonsville citizen involved in the Historical Society, one of the real groundbreaking individuals in the Baltimore County Public Schools in the things that he accomplished. Talk a little bit about your dad, Ben Ebersole, and the impact, what it was like growing up in his house, and what you learned from dad.
You know, I it's interesting you say that, because I see legislators who think like I do, but grew up in households where that was not the norm, that was not the way they were taught. I have it easy. My parents, my mom and my dad, both gave me a great template to learn from. And so, like, one of the issues, and we still have it to this day when we have issues, was back in the 60s, he became the assistant superintendent of Baltimore County Schools, and they wanted to introduce sex education into the schools at the ninth grade level, I think. And there was a group of people who said that, and this makes me chuckle when I say it out loud, if you teach kids about sex, then they're going to want to have sex. No, they already do, trust me. And so, you know, he wanted a robust education for kids that would help them to understand. And he fought very hard with that against some very conservative ministers and reverends around the county. I saw him go on one of those, you know, talk shows and argue with the guy.
So what was the minister's side? They should learn it on the streets.
Exactly.
No, nobody had sex before that.
And that's the standard mistake that's made even today, is that parents should teach them this stuff. That makes the assumption that every kid has two parents that are home all day.
How did their parents learn?
Don't have other jobs and things like that, you know. That everybody uses the model, the sort of 50s model. Okay, but not all kids have that.
Look at how Mueller turned out.
And one of the things that we argued very hard with the Republicans on in a bill that we put in recently was for the curriculum in sex ed to talk about what child abuse is, what sexual abuse is, what's appropriate and what's not, in a very careful way, but with young children. And they said, well, parents should tell them that. We said, well, you know, some kids are being abused. They need to get it in their head that that's not normal and be able to tell somebody. So he worked real hard on that. I'm real proud of my dad because he's a pioneer. He went to Elizabethtown College. What
year was he fighting for that?
60s, 68, somewhere
all
in there.
All right, all right. Before my time. So, I mean, I had sex education.
Yes.
1981 or 82.
And that's
right,
part exactly. of the reason. Sex education in the schools.
But you didn't. When you were nothing like that when you were in high school. Nothing.
Not really.
No, but I mean, I can imagine.
Listen to me.
It's 50 Catholic years later. I can imagine what a hot button that was, whatever year it started. The first year it started, 69, 70, 81, whenever it was, I was a hot button in the 80s when I went. My parents freaked out.
Right.
My parents were born in 1919. Sure. They couldn't believe I brought a book home about sex.
So he would take the chances. He went to Elizabethtown College in the late 40s, early 50s. The first black student was admitted to Elizabethtown one of those years. He roomed with him. Well, everybody was wide-eyed. He said it used to be quite funny to him that people would say, well, what's he like?
What's he like? I'm going to speak for a whole race of people.
Probably more open-minded than you.
I would hope that I'm catching up. Let's say that, okay? I could go on, and I'm not going to use up the whole broadcast, but my pop was a great guy, and my value system comes from him and my mom.
And I asked Nestor this recently. We did a Mother's Day thing. And I'll ask both of you this. What's the largest chunk of your dad that lives in you?
Well, I think, you know, I went into education, and, you know, I taught for 35 years. And so I think I came to value education in such a way. But I think it was the business of equal rights and the business of you know, that everybody needs to get, you know, an equal shot at things. Just teaching me that nobody is automatically greater than somebody else. I just came to understand that, and you had to think broadly about people's circumstances in their lives.
Well, you know, that's interesting, and I'm going to turn to you in a second, Pat. I recently spent about 9 hours on the road in one day, driving to Roanoke and back from Roanoke, picking up my granddaughter's belongings so she could get the rest of her stuff in her car. So it meant that I was able to finish the entire Springsteen Obama podcast, Renegades, where they literally sit in Springsteen's barn and talk about life. And one of Obama's themes of life that he said he learned from his parents early on was what you just said about your dad. You're not better than anybody, but nobody's better than you either. Nope. And he said, it's such a powerful line. You're not better than anybody, but nobody's better than you. And as I'm driving down Route 81.
That would be equality in a sentence,
man,
right?
I mean, that's like Obama at its best, right? And, of course, Springsteen's is good. What's the biggest chunk of your dad that lives in you?
I got a little warm up since you asked Eric. I was thinking. I think one generally that if you make a choice to do something, that you see it through, and not one because it's important that people can rely on you and that's who you are, but also that there's an expectation and there is a belief that if you have made a choice and you're going to be helping somebody out, that you got to finish it out, and it's not something left half done. Isn't just a disservice to you, it's a disservice to other folks. He just was always active, but never like seeking anything. Like, he was just around the 4th of July committee, the Knights of Columbus.
Well,
like, he was just always there.
Because I said you don't wear it on your sleeve. Your dad I used to see him at election stuff. Very understated.
Yeah.
Very understated. Always.
Yeah. Just being involved because it was the right thing to do.
I think because he came from that generation. I think, you know, and I think it was instinctive too from one of the Generation 2 society was like, you are involved in your community. Because that's what you're supposed to do.
That's how I was. You know, my father's from 1919. He always asked me about my dad with Father's Day coming up. I used to talk about my dad every year on March 5th because it's my dad's birthday. But, you know, I think about my father in Little League. I think about...
Yeah.
I tell Venatoulis all the time, and you'll remember this because you're a young old-timer. John Coulihan, the Lion of Halethorpe, got my parents custody of me and kept me from spending my life in Venezuela, right? So I stayed in America because of John Coulihan. And, you know, I think about my father. My father never served or any of that, but my father stood in soup lines in 1929, didn't have any food, always valued food above everything.
Yeah.
My father would always say, you got a dollar, put some food in your belly. He would always say that. So it is amazing that generation we talk about, you know, our parents, and I don't know how old you're, but my dad was born in 1919, but we talk about those 50s and 60s things. We were here with Kirby earlier talking about Catonsville, and I look at these structures and think, this was a dream of somebody post-war, right? Mm-hmm. This is an sure. FDR yeah. post-war, whatever we're sitting in here in 2021 from 80 years ago,
yeah.
there was a generation that decided Frederick Road needed to have businesses and houses and a butcher shop and a carpet shop and yeah. a paint store and all those things that every place in America had. And I think moving forward on the back end of this pandemic and the back end of Trump and Biden, we're trying to figure out what are we going to leave yeah. 80 years from now?
Yeah.
What's Catonsville going to look like 80 years from now?
What's somebody's vision 10 years from now, 15 years from now? What can we do now to make that vision
we got people who don't have the courage to see 6 months from now.
Yeah, literally. You're right. You're right.
Politically.
And people don't have the courage to look 90 days ago, right? To take a look and see what. But that's a topic for another
boy,
day.
I mean, could I go through that with a veteran?
Yeah, no.
Thank you for your service. But, you know, yeah.
How do people, now they're out there, they like what they hear. They hear your buddy here say, this is the guy. How do people connect with Pat Young for County Council? How do they find out more?
Yeah, sure. Just jump on social media, Facebook, Twitter. We got an Instagram page. But also, Pat Young, the number 4MD.com. I'm out and about. Feel free to, reach out. Our contact for the office, I'm still the delegate for another year.
Now, if I vote for you, end, I get exactly what I want, right, when I call?
That's
you're
right.
The one. You have to listen to your constituents.
Constituent,
right.
Constituent.
Well, we're talking.
It's selfish. Ask any.
It's important for me to interject that I will also be running for office.
Sorry, Eric is also up
delegate ever.
Again?
Yes.
Delegate Eric Ebersole running again. Delegate Pat Young got a year to go, running for county council. Nestor, as we sit here, get ready to chat with
Have both of you had crab cakes here yet?
No, I haven't.
Not yet. Not here yet.
Oh, could be a crab cake adventure.
Nice.
And meanwhile, we got Sunscape Live as we're getting ready. They're setting up for Sunscape.
I love we're here BSing about war and you're and there's dudes just setting up behind.
It
looked like the Dire Straits Money for Nothing video.
I don't care if they kick your chair as they go by.
So social studies class continues. Another great day.
Lou Weinkamp's here. I got a bookmaker in my fridge over here.
We're gonna talk about it.
I told Evan about that. Evan's bringing a crab cake. Lou doesn't know he's going to be the crab cake
guy.
There
we go.
Crab cakes are getting served during your time here, so it'll be all good.
Go. Nice.
Celebrating Catonsville in the 212. What do you love about Catonsville?
What I love about Catonsville? Community, and there's just so much to do down here. It's amazing.
What do you love about Catonsville?
It is in the perfect place geographically in Maryland. Man, you can get everywhere from here, or you can stay here and have a great time.
You know what I love about Catonsville? Tom Moeller's from Catonsville, and he knows everybody here. When I come, I have fun. Even
if we were a municipality, he'd be the mayor.
Listen to me. I told him that 7 weeks ago. I got my first shot, right? And I knew today is my shot. Today, yep. I'm clean beginning today. And I hit him, and I hit Evan. I was in here getting chicken and waffles about 3 weeks ago, and I said, I thought I was going to do it before Preakness. I thought we'd be here a week ago.
Sure.
And the weather's so much better today. Look out at this. I want to show everybody, and I know I'm going to screw up the thing here, but I want to show everybody.
Waiting to get in.
Well, there's a line waiting to get in. There's Lou. We've been waiting, a long, long time, a year, to get back out here and be part of something. And I hear the noise. I feel the energy. The breeze is coming through. They're setting up a band in here later
today.
We had
the UMBC graduation all morning.
It's good. It's good. The Orioles are they in last place or not yet?
Oh, I think.
Well, they're not the worst team in the American League.
Just checking.
Okay, let's just
I'm
get
just
that
trying to time. Find reasons to celebrate.
They're in last place, but there are. Well, but I think that either the Royals or the Tigers have a worse record.
Do I get to keep this?
Yes, you can
reasons
keep it.
To celebrate. Last night in the minor leagues on a rehab assignment, Jason DeGrom's first pitch was 100 miles an hour. His second pitch was 102 miles an hour. His third pitch was 103 miles per hour. This ain't our grandfather's baseball.
That's an arithmetic progression.
There you go. The math. This ain't our grandfather's baseball that they're playing anymore.
They're playing the dreaded Washington Senators this week.
Yeah, oh, my Lord.
There we go. All right. We're going to come back. We are going to have our official crab cake here. It's crab cake number 3, but not in that order because we don't do things in order around here. It's never a straight line, as Don says. So we're going to go to Costas for number 2, but we're going to celebrate number 3. Lou Weinkamp's here. We're going to talk about law, family, Catonsville, and crab cakes. We're WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.